It's February the 26th, 2016, in the Lucy Coleman Studio in Los Angeles, California, in the United States of America, on God's good, great planet, Earth. Thank you for joining me for another webcast. Adversity, life's greatest teacher. In the background, Seal, a number called Deep Water.
On their faces, they entered their doom like they knew. If the world should end, they won't care about that anyway.
If the world should end, listen to this,
I change the water and I burn the fire. You play with chemicals, making their doom like you knew. If the world should end, you won't care about that anyway. Maybe that's the way you live your life, but I know life, it don't always live that way.
Yeah, that's so true, so true. You know, I wanna take you through some thoughts, something to really make us think about our lives, looking at adversity in a different way. All right, facing adversity in a different way. And thank you, Seal. That was a good introduction. For those of you that are not familiar with me and coming to my website and listening to the webcast, what I attempt to do is I attempt to speak to spiritual people, people that have a connection with God, not religious people, not people that want to castigate judgment on other people's lives, because that is not, I did not truly believe in my heart that that is what God wanted us to do. I think God wants us to look at ourselves. You know me, I go to the Bible, and I'm in John chapter 9. I'm just going to read 3 verses to you, and then we're going to see how we're taught to deal with adversity. And as he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, "Teacher, who messed up? Who sinned? Who did the dirty? This man or his parents, that he should be born blind?" And Jesus answered in verse 3 and says, "It is neither that this man sinned nor his parents, but it was in order that the works of God might be displayed in him." My friends, your life will display the works of God. But you're saying, "But John, this is adversity. Come on, the man was born blind." And Jesus' disciple asked a real good question. Who messed up? Who made this happen? Well, I got some news for you. We're living in a world today that is a problem planet. I mean, when you think about what's happening, Chris Rock is going to do the Academy Awards this year in 2016, and there were no black nominees, and everybody's on pins and needles attempting to see how it's going to look. Will and Jada Smith won't attend. Other black stars will not attend. Rich millionaires, people that, and guess what? They're thinking about 40 million people watching that on ABC this year, just to be acquiescing with what's happening. Well, to me personally, I think that's a waste of time. But some people need to be entertained, and they want to see what the latest fashions are and all of that. And that's okay if you like that kind of stuff. But though the person that is spiritual has promises from God, that person, the spiritual person, is not exempt from, let's call it negativity, because this is negativity. If a person is born blind, they can't see. And so the disciples, and rightly so, I think, were just in asking that question. Who screwed up that this would happen to these people like that? That's what they're asking. We did they have questions concerning the dilemma of our lives. And each of us are but a small part of the big question. And this big question is aimed at God. Why is there adversity? Why is there conflict during the Academy Awards on racial issues? Why is the governor of a particular state, you can do the research on the internet, making April a Confederate flag month? I mean, why is Donald Trump so adamant? Man, this would be the first president of the United States that ever appeared like he was going off on the deep end, and it looks like the majority of the population loves that kind of stuff. Adversity, what is it? Problems, pain, turmoil, sorrow, despair, anger. It's all around us. You know, but really, if you really want to understand the John chapter 9 passage, it may do you well to look at John chapter 8, verses 48 through 59. Why don't we do that right now? Let me read it to you right quick, and then you can really understand, because this is just the way a lot of people are. Today, especially church people, they're always looking for a reason to pin something on. And the Jews answered and said unto him, "Do we not say rightly that you are a Samaritan and have a demon?" This is what they were speaking about Jesus. They said, "You're a half-breed Jew, half black, mixing with some kind of Afrocentric thing. You're a crazy Samaritan that has a demon." That's what they thought about Jesus. Can you imagine? And so when you look at the racial tensions and everything in our day and age, it's nothing new. The same kind of stuff happened. Jesus answered, "I do not have a demon, but I honor my Father, and you dishonor me." Oh, isn't that the way it is in life today? And then in verse 50, Jesus says, "But I do not seek my glory. There is one who seeks and judges. Truly I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he shall never see death." Now, see, Jesus isn't telling you that you're not going to die. Because when you look at this term death and you look at spiritual matters, Jesus is talking about eternal life. He says that the person that truly trusts in me, though his body will die, he will never die. Now, I have to explain the passage. And there's a quick escape from a stoning coming up, because when Jesus made these words, they wanted to kill him. The Jews said unto him in verse 52, "Now we know that you have a demon. Abraham died and the prophets also. And you say, if anyone keeps my word, he shall not taste of death. Surely you are not greater than our father Abraham, who died. The prophets died too. Whom do you make yourself out to be?" Now, this is very interesting. We have to read to verse 59, verse 54. And I'm doing this for those of you that are driving or on the train or on the bus, because you can't, well, listen to what Jesus said. "If I glorify myself, my glory is nothing. It is my Father who glorifies me, of whom you say he is your God." Now, you see, and so Jesus really, really puts it on. He really puts it on the spot here. Look at verse 55. "And you have not come to know him, but I know him. And if I say that I did not know him, I shall be a liar like you." Jesus was right to the point. He knew who the religious people were and that they were lying. He says, "But I do know him and keep his word. Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and when he saw it, he was glad." Look at verse. Jesus is saying right here that when the patriarch of the Jewish nation, when he saw him, how did he see him if Jesus was born some 32 years prior to him making this statement, and Abraham had been dead for thousands of years? You see, this is some of the dilemma that you have to work through. "And the Jews therefore said to him in verse 57, 'You are not yet 50 years old, and you've seen Abraham?' Jesus said to them, 'Truly I say unto you, before Abraham was born, I am.'" Now you have to understand this term, "I am." over the years when I was pastoring and I preached for this from this text, and I looked at this, it was interesting to go into the Greek and to really uncover what this is. This is the same I am that spoke to Moses at the burning bush. In the burning bush, when Moses was told to take off his shoes because he was on holy ground, and God told Moses to go back to Ramses, the Pharaoh of Egypt, and tell him to let the Hebrews go out of Goshen from being slaves, or he was going to put a whammy on them. Don't worry about the bells. That's just messages I'm constantly. But anyhow, you remember that, right? Well, that same one that was speaking to Moses at the burning bush is the same one that is speaking to these Jewish religious leaders some 2,000 years ago. I know that's a hard thing to believe, but you have to have faith to believe this. And trust me, this was not a white man with blonde hair and blue eyes, a European talking trash. It wasn't that. Nor was it a Polynesian. No. No, 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 no. Nor was it a Nubian right in the midst of Africa. No, it was not. I don't care how he looked, what he looked like. I am into this man that lived. And it's not a racial image that I am subscribing to. I wonder what would happen if you would show most evangelical Christians that Jesus was not a European. They would probably deter from their faith. Verse 59 says, therefore they picked up stones and in order to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple. Now, believe it or not, that was Jesus facing adversity. When you tell a group of people that you're God, okay? When you tell them that you're God and then they pick up stones to throw at you, that is adversity. Our Lord provides for us the answer for our many unique questions. What do we learn from this short but very interesting answer? And what answer am I talking about? I'm talking about verse 2 of chapter 9. When they ask him who sinned, he or his parents? Now let's get into this. First, we learn that the disciples went to the right person with the right question in verse 2. Remember what it said? And the disciples asked him, saying, Rabbi, our teacher, who sinned? This man? Now how could the man sin if he wasn't even born yet? It's impossible for the man to sin if he wasn't born. Or was it the man's parents that he should be born blind? That's the question. And the disciples ask him. Now, others, though hopeful in their assistance, didn't always have it. In other words, others also have more questions than they can answer themselves. But here, these guys that were following Jesus back in the day went to someone that they thought had some spiritual light in order to gain the answer for their dark minds. Okay, let me mute this a little bit because everybody is commenting. Oh, I'll let that, just let me try to turn it down. Here it is. It is noisome, and I don't want that to keep happening. Though I have a lot to do in the office today, I'm going to try to get that done without as much distractions as I possibly can. So their minds were darkened and they went to the light to try to seek some answers. Second, they addressed the person that they were asking as teacher, a rabbi. We might even translate this as, let's go to the guide. Let's go to the mastermind and see what he can answer. The teacher had a lesson format that had to be explained. And so they, as intelligent followers of this teacher, see, if we're going to really call ourselves people that are Christians, and you can be a Christian, it doesn't matter. You are a Christian if you are close to God spiritually, and if you use the book, the Bible, and you read it, And if you can relate, now, what I've been doing for all of my life, especially as a pastor, I'm no longer a professional pastor. I don't pastor a church. I don't do that. But I'll always be a pastor. I will always be a pastor in my mind, in my heart. And I will always love people. And I will always adjure people to seek to find some spiritual life, liveliness in their lives. Now, this is beautiful. Second, they addressed him as teacher. Jesus draws up all the plans for all of our lives. He has assigned certain quizzes and tests for us, and all of us have to fulfill that for the class. He is the one who watches us as we seek to make the grade. See, they addressed him as teacher, and that's what a teacher does, right? Makes your formats out, gives you quizzes and tests to follow it. And that's why when you go to church, you shouldn't follow no pastor. You shouldn't follow some religious leader. You shouldn't follow a man. You should not ever waste your time doing that. There is a greater responsibility that we have to God to follow him and to follow him alone. Thirdly, we understand that there was no question which the teacher is not willing to provide an answer. Remember, they ask in verse 2, who sinned? Who messed up? Who did something? The person that is blind or the parents? That this person would be found to be blind. In other words, what caused this adversity? Was it something that someone did? And don't we think that way? You know, it draws me to this. James chapter 1 verse 5 reads like this. But if any of you lacks wisdom, this is what the Bible says. But if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all men generously and without reproach, and it will be given him. Now, you can ask in doubt, but the James text points out plainly that if you're lacking wisdom, if you don't know, that you can go directly to God. You don't have to, when adversity comes in your life, when situations and pains come, I recall when I had the flu about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Friends, it was devastating to me. I mean, it was like, oh my God, how am I going to continue to survive? I can barely walk. I can barely think. I didn't want to eat. I didn't want to get anything done. I forced myself to go to the college to teach. I asked the students to stay away from me because, you know, the major part of it was gone, but the hangover of that, oh my goodness. And I asked God, I says, what do you want me to do? You see what I mean? Now, I got some other texts that I'd like to share with you, and some of you that are out there that call yourselves Bible teachers, and if you want to teach a Bible, and let me share with you. I was on the internet today, and I went to one of my Facebook friends, and he has these little clip antidotes that he's talking about on his Facebook page. He is a believer, a spiritual man in God, and he was doing music, popular music. I've spoken with him a couple of times, once here live in the studio. And I'm looking at his clips and I'm loving them because what he is doing is giving biblical principles without quoting one text. That's good. And I admonished him today and I said, thank you for doing it the right way. Because I told him years ago, you cannot come with all this evangelical if you don't do this or if you do that. Because that is not a workable commodity these days. What we want to do is we want to make sure, in a very positive way, we want to make sure that all of what we are doing is the right way and the right way to conduct ourselves. Oh, it's beautiful when you really look at that. Now, let's continue to go. Hebrews chapter 4, verses 15 and 16. I want to read that. I'm sorry. No, not Hebrews 4, 15 and 16. That's wrong. No, it's not. Here it is. Listen, he says, for we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses. This verse is talking about using, and the person that's writing the text, we don't know who wrote the book of Hebrews. There is no author to it. Some people think that it was Paul the Apostle. Some people think that it was a very rich-minded Jew that was inclined in the Old Testament text. But he writes and he says, "For we do not have a high priest," meaning Jesus, "who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses." In other words, he's saying that Christ knows when we are going through adversity. And he says, "But one who has been tempted in all things as we are, and yet without sin." Or let me put it to you this way, states that when Jesus was going through his adversity, he didn't once strike back at his accusers. He didn't do that. And then it says in verse 16, it says, "Let us therefore draw near with confidence to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in the time of need." So the Bible admonishes us to go to God when that difficulty comes upon us, not to friends, not to some pastor. What should I do, Pastor? My life is falling apart and I don't do well. Come and bring your tithes and offering. Give me your money. And when you give me your money, your life will no longer be funny. No, 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 no. You can boldly approach God and you don't have to bring a dime, a red cent with you, because God is not looking for that at all. Never has. Matthew chapter 26, verse 39. Are you taking these verses down? Oh, you driving. I'm sorry. All right. It says, "And he went a little beyond them and fell on his face and prayed, saying, Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me, yet not as I will, but as you will." This is when Jesus was going to be crucified in the Garden of Gethsemane, and the Jewish police force had come to with Roman authority to get him out of the Garden of Gethsemane and to string him up and kill him. And so Jesus is feeling this adversity and he falls on his face and he goes to God and he said, "If it is possible, don't let me go through this." You see, and this is what I love about the historical Jesus. He was real with it. He says, "Don't let me go through this. This is going to hurt. This is going to try to tear me apart." So we understand that there's no question which the teacher is not willing to provide an answer. My friends, fourthly on this outline, and it's very plain, there's but one answer for all of the adversity that befalls us in this life. One answer. And I think it's very plain in verse 3, that the work of God might be manifested in the person that is going through the adversity. You get it? If you're going through a bad time, God knows it. God sees it. See, I'm no longer a member of a church. I don't attend church anymore. I have no fear of not doing that, because nothing is going to happen to me if I don't attend church. I haven't attended church in going on now about maybe 3 years. And I still love God, obviously. I'm still reading from his word. I believe every word, you see. And so you're not this thing about going to church. No, no, no. Every person that has a relationship with God is aware of that particular relationship and how that relationship has developed their own lives. That the works of God may be manifest. We understand that God has a purpose in all adversity, just the way the famed philosopher, who's that? Aristotle would say that we were born with a purpose and to live that purpose out in our lives. And that would be the intention of our lives. So the blind man's life was conceived in the mind of God as a lesson plan demonstrating trust. Now you're saying, "John, what are you get that from? Let's go back to John chapter 9. And that would be our main text, which we're speaking from. And we're going to look at verses 6 and 7a. And when he had said this, he spit on the ground and made clay of the spittle and applied the clay to the eyes of the blind man. And he said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam. Now, remember, there's but one answer for all of the adversity that befalls us in this life. And when we see Jesus giving the lesson plan, he outlines it, defining what obedience looked like. Go and wash. What he did is he spit on the ground, made some mud out of the spittle that he spit on the ground, and rubbed it on the blind man's eyes. Now you can see the man walking around with a big mud patch with a very big mud patch on his eyes, walking around. And then Jesus told him to go to the pool of Siloam and wash his face. Well, number one, how could he know where the pool of Siloam is? Let's perhaps look at it this way. Maybe he was so familiar with the environment that he knew where the pool was. Being a blind man, he wasn't completely stupid or dumb, just like we aren't. We can have adversity, but we know how to get around. And so this all makes sense to me. It's not some hocus pocus rigmarole. You see, you can take a section of scripture out of the Bibles, and I want you Bible teachers to listen to me, you real Bible teachers. You don't add anything to the text. You have to look into the text and do a homiletical approach to find out what is rational. And it's rational to me what Jesus told the man to do. Go and wash. So he outlined defining what obedience looked like. Go and wash. Now, this premise, which denoted a positive conclusion, he went and he washed, and what happened? And he saw. That's right. He went and he washed. And he saw, because look at the end of verse 7. He said, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is translated sent. And so he went away and washed, and he came back seeing. You guys get it yet? When adversity comes in your life, and you go to God, and God will answer by giving you life lessons. What you should do is go and wash, or whatever it is he tells you to do, and then your adversity would end. When I started this semester, I was in agony, really. Agony of mind. But you see, I have to work because I don't have a congregation taking care of my life. And so I have to provide for my own life. And let me be plain with it and real with it. If I'm not able to go to work and if I'm not able to provide for myself, that's it. I'm done. I'm going to lose everything that I've worked for and everything. I have children that love me. I'm sure that they would try to help me out. But I'm a senior citizen. I must work. I'm one of those guys that have to work because church never gave me a decent retirement, insurance, nothing. Never did. Now, you may think I was a fool. No, I'm not a fool because I preached like this. It all made sense. Now, the people that believe that, and I can tell you some stories. Most of the people in the church did not believe what I was saying. They didn't believe that the book had that connotation at all. Ah, look at this. So the premise, which denoted a positive conclusion, the same is true in all of our lives. There are lessons to learn. Adversity only assist us in getting the lesson. So when the adversity comes, we ought not fight against it. How you say? First, the blind man had to accept that which appeared to be unfair. What appeared to be unfair? He was blind from his birth. See, he had nothing to do with that at all. He was blind from his birth, but the blind man had to accept that. You notice when the Lord told the blind man what to do, he just went on and did it. He didn't start talking back. Well, why should I have to go and do that? That seems stupid to me. See, that sounds like a lot of people in our day and age. See, that's why I don't like listening to these preachers. They have you doing stupid things. No, no, no. You have the adversity. You want to get out of the adversity. I tell the boys that come around me all the time, young men flock around me. I love them, man. They're beautiful creatures. Young adults are beautiful. Because you know what? If they didn't have parents to guide them, well, they need a mentor to guide them. Now, check it out. Check it out. Check it out. Uncomfortable. What? He spit and made some mud and put it on his eyes? Who spit in my face? What is this? See, the blind man could have walked away and said, Negro, you crazy. And it was unusual. Unusual because Jesus told him to go find a pool which he couldn't see in the first place and wash in it. What? Look, God will give you some tasks to fulfill if you trust in him. Trust me. That's what he does. He gives us these tasks to fulfill. He could have responded that Jesus was indeed unkind, that Jesus was a fruitcake, a nitwit, a bum who should not be listened to. I have to ask you this question. How do you respond to what you've just heard? Romans 8:28 in the New Testament says, "For we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose." We know that, don't we? Yeah. I mean, we quote that all the time. I mean, for years I quoted it. But then whenever the bad happened, man, nobody wanted to go along with that. Everybody, well, just let it be good. Not necessarily. Look at 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 6 and 7. Reads like this. It says, whom yourselves, humble yourself, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in proper time, casting all of your anxiety upon him, because he cares for you. And so what this text is saying, humble yourselves. When God wants to teach you a lesson through adversity, you have to humble yourselves in order to receive that lesson, and so that you won't find yourself talking back to fate, F-A-T-E. And you know what I mean by talking back to fate. If fate has it that I lose my voice and I can't talk anymore, then that means that I will never be able to teach to make a living. I'm not going to become angry at God. I'm going to ask him, so what's next? And if he purports to me in my mind, in my heart, in my soul, whatever he purports to me, I will sing that old song that we used to sing in the church years ago. It is well with my soul. In conclusion, let me say this. There are always divine reasons for every adversity that every individual runs into. We may never know what is going on in our life, but we can trust God. No, you can't trust people. No, that's not going to happen. Please don't ever try to trust people, because people would change like the weather. They would change like the weather. You will think that they're your friends, but man, when these people get through with your minds, you will be twisted and taken every which way and out. Don't trust in men. I can't put more emphasis upon that. So, if you know the reasons for the adversity, Would that keep you from loving God? I'm serious. Let's say that, you know, you were diagnosed with AIDS. And let's say that you got AIDS through a blood transfusion, or fooling with the wrong person, or whatever it is. Would you hate God? Or would you trust him through the adversity? If you had MS, multiple sclerosis, I know a young man nearing 45, 46, he has MS. His muscles are crippling up. They have him on steroids. It's working pretty good now. And I hope it continues to work. But I speak with him all the time about his adversity. And he texted me yesterday and he said, "I love you, John." That's all he said. "I love you." And I texted him back. He says, "Brother, I love you too." Man, God is alive. God is working. Man, when I think about this man's journey. And you know what? He knows I don't go to church. He goes to a church and I'm wondering why the brothers in his church can't love him like that. You know why they can't do it? Because they're all about pleasing the pastor and the ministry. But I don't tell him not to go to church. I said, "Hey, man, you do what you think you have to do. If you knew the reasons, would you keep serving him? And if you did it that way, I would call that conditional salvation." If I don't know, Lord, well, then I'm no longer yours. Well, that's not going to work. Therefore, how am I to deal with adversity? I think 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 10 really speaks volumes to this. This is what Paul writes to the church at Corinth, and he says, "Therefore, I am well content with weaknesses." In other words, Paul says, when I'm weak, man, like when I had that flu, I was well content with it. I said, "I'm going," and I told the students, I put the mic at the lectern right up next to my mouth, and I said, "My body is recovering from a bout with the flu, and I lost the first two rounds, but if God helps me, I'll make it through." See, "Therefore, I was well content with weaknesses, with insults, with distress, with persecutions, with difficulties, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong." Oh, I know it's a, what do they call it? It sounds ambiguous. It sounds like a misnomer. It sounds like something that is crazy. How can you say that, John? How can you be strong when you are weak? Simply put, because it's not you. It's the person that lives in you that makes you strong. You see, that's why God is in me. Oh, man, I wish you could understand that. Because if you could understand that, you would not have a problem with practically anything else. If you are honest, you are honest and you will admit that adversity is painful. It is very painful. I'm not going to lie to you and try to tell, "Well, no, you can get through it. It ain't nothing to it. I mean, you know, we all got..." No. Adversity is painful. Luke chapter 22 in the New Testament, verses 41 through 43 says, "And he withdrew from them about a stone's throw, and he knelt down and began to pray." This is Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane again. Listen to this, because it's painful. "Saying, Father, if thou art willing, remove this cup from me, yet not my will, but yours be done." Look at verse 43. "Now an angel from heaven appeared to him, strengthening him." I don't know how that took place. I don't know what that was all about. Don't ask me if the angel had wings, if it was a white man with blonde hair. I doubt that. Because I know enough about where the angelic creatures come from. They were all created at one time. They never die. They are not human. But this was a metaphysical experience that this man had. And have you ever been so full of adversity at the end of your ropes, at the end of it? Come on, man. Have you ever been at the end of it and it appears like something just happened to bring you great peace in the middle of perplexity? Great comfort in the midst of chaos. Hey, that's why I believe in God. I worship Him. I love Him. I'm not going to get into the argument if you see God as a female or not. Worship God. Take the female male out of it. God doesn't have sexual organs. And so that's not what you're appealing to. You have to get out of this epistemology that teaches that if you fully understand the divine as you contrive it in your mind. I'm not, excuse me, I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about that at all. I'm talking about really, honestly, and truthfully being honest about what is going on. That's how you deal with adversity in your life. And I hope that this look in adversity will help you as you go on from day to day. I'm glad that I could take these 41 minutes or so and speak with you and share my heart with you. And I hope that you got something out of this lesson. Hey, come back to the website when you get a chance, all right? And I have some more goodies to share with you. Let's listen to Seal do this deep water again. Listen to his words, see if he's right on.
Earth and swear from a northern blue sky. Smile on their faces, they entered their doom like they knew. If the world should end, they won't care about that anyway. I drink the water and I burn the fire. You play with chemicals, making their doom like you knew. If the world should end, you won't care about that anyway. Maybe that's the way you live your life, but I know life, it don't always live that way. Jade, a shade of pain, and then we die.
Remember what we said. You've got to believe in God. This adversity is coming. I don't know anybody that's not going to go through it. Yeah. Your life. If God brings adversity, He'll lift you out of it. Trust me.